some cases, our systems are, or it's not obvious that there's a failure or that it's about to fail. And some things are worth detecting or inspecting prior to a failure so that we can effect a repair or replacement prior to the say, a wing falling off of an aircraft. We'd much rather detect those cracks that could lead to failure or the weakness of a joint, for example, that would indicate that we may have a catastrophic failure pending, and hopefully well in advance that there's any significant risk to it occurring. In other cases, we have a failure in our hands, that whether it's corrective or preventative maintenance of some state of the equipment, and we want to measure the thickness of, say, a plating or the amount of wear that it's occurred or the electrical parameters. And there's all kinds of different ways to measure things, and some of which are destructive. We cut things in half and measure with a scanning electron microscope metal layer thicknesses, but it does require destroying the sample. Tensile strength testing. We pull a sample in a controlled fashion until it fractures, and that is a destructive test, is an example. But there are a whole series of tests that are not destructive, and it's a good place to start cataloging the different ways you can do this and see how we can learn as much as we can without significantly damaging or at all damaging the equipment. Now, in the reading material, there's a whole list of different methods and short descriptions for each of these. But I'm going to run down just a handful of these and some of the ways I've used them in the past. And hopefully that'll be of use to you as you may have a different set that you're familiar with. And so please add some comments to the lesson page as to which of these you've used in different ways to make it work. Now, there's a couple different ways to do just optical methods. It's essentially just look at it. Now, you might use a microscope or a magnifying glass or some special lighting, for example, to make that work. But we can also use it with this holographic type idea, is looking or foray patterns to look for flatness, or and various things can be revealed, say, with infrared and looking at it under different frequencies of light. But we can also get into how waves are propagated and how things travel through different mediums, and using principles of optical wave transmission in order to detect if there's a flaw or a problem. Eddy currents are setting up a pattern using the electromagnetic properties, and if it sets up a current loop, for example, or a electromagnetic field, we may be able to generate these currents that flow in small circles, basically within the bulk of the material. And it's a way to detect anomalies or cracks or occlusions within the bulk of the material. And that can be pretty handy looking for cracks, say, in an airplane wing. There's also ultrasonic, which we have used if you've or expecting a baby and they used an ultrasound. Essentially, it's similar into idea of that. But also we can use different ways to detect things that are very difficult to find otherwise. And this liquid dye penetrant is one of them. So I had a circuit board one time, and we knew that we had some cracks somewhere in the system, but we couldn't figure out where exactly they were. They were intermittent in nature. And our probing and measuring electrically, it knew that on this particular trace, on occasion, one of the 10 components had a crack, probably in the solder joint. So we filled the board, or flooded the board, with this machinist dye number 2, which happens to be very, I'm not sure what the right word is, but it would wet to the surfaces and wick into the smallest cracks and openings. And then shake off the excess, let it dry, and then peel off or break off the components. And what we're looking for is a section that shows the red dye that's within where the component should have been attached. So if the solder joint has a crack that goes halfway through it, the red dye would cover half of the pad, the area where we expected it to be attached. And so it would reveal exactly where those cracks were, where they existed. It was pretty handy for us to then troubleshoot where those cracks were coming from and avoid them. Now, of course, we can use X-ray and look through materials, and we can use it with shadowing type approach of the older X-ray equipment. But there's also more modern equipment that lets you do basically a cross-section and using X-ray technology to do that. I don't know what gamma ray is used for. I'll have to look that one up myself. Mentioned thermal imaging and infrared. But I used microwave at one point when I was looking for a change in the resistivity of a bulk material along a cable. And using the microwave signal being pulsed through the material, we could look for reflections in the microwave signal. And it allowed us to detect where the significant change in the resistivity occurred, usually caused by some damage to the wire. It was also looking at vibrations or signatures. If a shock, for example, we expect the energy for a solid piece of material to propagate in a certain way and have a certain type of vibration being created. But it's like a wine glass that if you wet your finger and rub the top lip of the wine glass, you sometimes can create a tone depending on the quality of the glass. But if the glass has got a crack in it, it won't set up that resonant frequency to create that tone. So using vibration or signature analysis, you're able to look for those anomalies within a material that would create a variation from what you expect. And so it's another way to get a sense of what's going on internally to your product. But then there's also just the simulations. Let's model this. Let's look at simulating a shock impulse into our finite element model and see what kind of responses we get. Of course, the more accurately you model your system, one, it becomes more complicated and more expensive, but it also gives us some real sense of what we should be looking for. In some cases, we don't have the sample, so simulation is really our only way to do it. And since it's simulating the sample, it really doesn't touch it. It certainly is non-destructive. And BIST and BIT is built-in self-test and built-in test. So sometimes, like my smoke alarm, it has a test button, and it's really just evaluating the circuitry that if it trips and says, hey, there's smoke in the room, it will sound an alarm. But if I don't get an alarm, it doesn't prove that it's working. So it has a test button. I evoke a self-test, and it checks the circuit and sounds the alarm. Now, built-in self-test and BIT are similar in many cases, but they are usually onboard to the equipment itself, oftentimes built right into the logic of the circuitry, and custom ASICs would have BIST built right into them. And the notion is that you can invoke those as a normal cycle of your operation, or at startup, or when an anomaly is detected and you want to verify it more thoroughly. So there's different ways to evoking these different kinds of tests. And another group is called in-process or ICT testing, in-circuit testing. And those are usually done during production processes in order to evaluate the performance of your product as it's being assembled. Oftentimes those tests are right after the process where the failure may first appear or manifest itself. So ICT would be done after we place all the components on the board, and then we evaluate that, do we have the right components and are they attached correctly? And then EMI and EMC is really looking at electromagnetic radiation, either coming into the product and what it does or coming from the product and where it goes. So there's different ways of detecting electromagnetic radiation in and around a system. So that's just a very quick, high-level view of a whole range of different tests. There's more all the time being created and invented. Not everything requires the destruction of your sample, and it's often prudent to use these non-destructive methods to get a sense of what's really going on before you start taking it apart. A good place to start? Well, what's the failure mode? What's the symptom? Using a fault tree analysis type approach or your engineering knowledge is what kind of mechanisms would actually cause that symptom to occur. and then start breaking that down by using optical is often a good place to start, just a good magnifying glass or a microscope, or start doing the various types of tests to get into the bulk of the material or to see through the material, for example, or see within the material. It's lots of different ways to evaluate and start to refine the hunches that you have or the experience you have is what is likely to have failed. And start ruling those out or identify that it actually is this particular solder joint is cold and it cracked quickly. But you can learn a lot by doing non-destructive tests. Now, I should mention, I think it was the dye penetrant, or I should say dye penetrant, doesn't have to be destructive. The way I used it was, we would flood the board and then break off the components. But the dye penetrant might also be something that then is visible as going into places it really shouldn't. Now, you may not want the dye on your product, so it's not going to be a useful product afterwards. So I tend to think of it as a destructive test one way or the other. But there are a variety of different dyes that then are used to reveal different behaviors of a product or senses of a product. The way I used it was really a destructive test, now that I think of it. So among this idea of affecting your maintenance program is that we also have to be able to detect that we have a failure and or detect what actually is causing the failure so we can repair the appropriate part. So in the next lesson, we'll talk a little bit more about testability and specifically some test strategies.